Hello and welcome to episode 339 of the Mark and Me podcast. As always, I'm your host Mark. Now joining me on today's episode is the film director Milad Alami. On today's episode, I get to sit down and talk in depth with him all about his brand new film, Opponent. He's a great director, has such a great vision, the film is absolutely outstanding, and I can't wait to share that interview with you all in only a few minutes' time. But as always, you know the score by now. I always like to use the intro of every single episode of Mark and Me to touch base and talk about my previous episode, and my God, it blew up. It was the fourth appearance from the frontman of Thrice, Dustin Kensrew. We got to sit down and talk all about his solo album, touring with the band, and so much more. This was also on YouTube and has now been my second most downloaded episode and my second most viewed video on YouTube, so it really has blown up. And I just want to say now a massive thank you to Thrice and Dustin for sharing it on their own social media channels. That had a huge impact on the numbers, and thanks to everyone that's now jumped on board and is now a fan of the podcast from listening to that interview. But today, as I said, it's all about Milad. He's an amazing director and a great interview. It really gives a great insight to the art of filmmaking and the challenges that come with it. So I think the best thing to do right now is to get straight to it. So here's me and Milad talking all things film. So Milad, thank you for joining me today on the Mark and Me podcast.
Thank you.
Milad, what I do with all guests that come on the podcast, and it's been going 7 years now, but I'm always interested in what made you fall in love with film. So was there a certain film or an actor that when you were a kid growing up made you fall in love with cinema and film?
It's difficult to say like a specific situation, but I think, you know, for me, I grew up in the north of Sweden.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that many. We had like one cinema, but I had this friend who I remember when I was around 12, 13, he had like VHS collections of Kurosawa, Fassbinder, Cassavetes. I think it was his dad, you know, that.
Yeah.
And I remember watching like Seven Samurai, and I was like, wow, it was really amazing. And it kind of grew out of that. But I don't know if that was like the moment I became interested in films. But I think for me, it started a lot with kind of, I loved watching films. I really loved it, you know, so yeah.
What age were you when you kind of started to want to kind of wonder how these films were constructed and made? Because I remember being a kid and falling in love with film, but I didn't know that it wasn't real. I'd watch it on my telly and be all excited at the cinema, that it was like another world out there. I didn't really, until I was a teenager, step back and think, actually, you know, what actually goes into this to make it? Can you remember that point when you were starting to find that interest inside you that was like, I want to know how this is made and the magic happens?
Yeah, definitely. I think I was around like 16, 17, where I was really trying to understand filmmaking. I remember, you know, I bought like film books, like about writing and about filmmaking, because it was so magical. As you're saying in the beginning, you're kind of just in awe of like, wow, a story can be told like this. And it's so many elements with music and everything. So, but it was around that age when I started really becoming interested in it. And, you know, making some short films with my friends. I made some, like, you know, this kind of stop motion animation films because it was fun to see the magic of films, you know. But it was around that age, like 16, 17.
So at this point, were you kind of ever thinking to yourself that you could try and make a career of it? Or was it just a bit of a hobby and a dream that, you know, everyone wants to be famous, but were you just kind of having that thought of, is this actually something I can do, or was it more of just a dream?
I think for me, it wasn't something I felt I could do. It was really a game. It was fun. But then when I was around 22, 23 or something, I applied to film school. And I applied to the National Film School of Denmark. And I heard a lot good about that school because I heard there was like a lot of really good directors who went there. And when I was accepted, I was like, okay, now this actually can lead to something. That was the first time I was also nervous about, wow, okay, I have to like make good films and, you know, and makes films that people understand and like all of these things. But it wasn't for me because I work with other stuff. I work with young refugee kids. I work with different stuff, you know. So it wasn't like filmmaking was my path. But I applied to film school because I made this short film when I was like 19 or something, and it won this award where it said that I had to travel somewhere with some money. And I went to the States and I stayed in Vermont in the forest in like a writing cabin. And there I just was like, okay, I'm just going to write applications to film schools. So I sent my application from there. So it was just like, it was like thought through.
Were you kind of sitting there thinking, I'll just fire loads of emails and letters off and just hope? But what was it like when they came back and said, you're in, you know, you've got a place?
It was really overwhelming. I mean, I applied to like the Swedish film school, the Norwegian, the Danish. I heard there was some in UK called the National Film School that I didn't apply to that, but I was like, oh, maybe I should. But when the National Film School of Denmark, it's such a long process. It takes like a couple of months being accepted because you do all these tests. But I remember, like every time I did a test, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get any further. But I just went and went further. And I remember the last test. We were there like a couple of days doing all these kind of directing things. Then I remember, like, I was almost like angry. I was like, if I don't get into this film school, I wasted like $1,000 on flights and stuff. I have to get in, you know? But it was overwhelming. It changed my life, you know, because I grew up in a very small town in the north of Sweden without knowing anyone really who made films. Then I suddenly came to Copenhagen and, you know, went into this long tradition of filmmaking at that school. So it changed a lot. It was overwhelming.
I ask this to a lot of people because I think it's sometimes a battle or it's what makes you. And were your family supportive? Because obviously, where you came from, it was unheard of. They weren't people making careers out of this. Were they thinking that you were taking a huge risk, or were they fully supportive and like, son, we're going to believe in you? Or were they kind of doing the whole, is there something else you can fall back on before this, you know?
No, it definitely, I mean, they were supportive in the kind of, you know, in the beginning, they were like, oh, it's fun, you're doing something else, and blah, blah, blah. But I think that they were, but there was this period where they were, you know, yeah, maybe you should, you know, find something else or study to that something that's more kind of a stability in it. But when I was accepted, they were very, very happy because it was a big deal. There weren't like anyone from, like, there weren't that many from Sweden even accepted to that school. So it was a big thing. So they were very supportive from that point. And I'm very thankful for that because, you know, I have a daughter myself. It's difficult to, you know, for a person to kind of be supportive when you know that the work they're doing is so, can be so difficult because there aren't that many people who can make a living from it, you know. But when I was accepted to the school, they were very, very happy.
It's amazing. And I suppose then coming to terms with your craft, trying to perfect it the best way you can, getting involved in making shorts. Did you know it was the right decision then after film school? Were you just like, this is the best decision I've made? This is all I want to do? There was no plan B?
No, there wasn't a plan B. I think that when I went to the school, I was in a really good, like, you know, they're also like some of my best friends now. I went with the same group of people, like Ali Abbasi, who made Holy Spider, Isabella Eklöf, who did Holiday, and we had like a really good group of directors, and we became really tight. So it also, we kind of also, you also fed from the energy of everyone else's dream. So when I graduated, I was like, I'm just going to make a feature film, like whatever it costs, I have to make a feature film, you know. And straight out of film school, I made like three short films in like 1 year. And then I wrote together with the screenwriter Ingeborg Topsoe my first feature. But I was very, I knew that I was like thinking, if I just make one feature, I've tried it and maybe it goes good. Maybe I don't like it, but and then of course I liked it. I wanted to continue, but it was like the goal was just to make this first feature.
So how does it feel when you've done that first feature, you've done the shorts, you were so busy doing three in a year, that's just, you know, insane amount of work. Did you just strive off it and just each time want to improve and take something bigger with a bigger budget, with a bigger scale of a set? Were you just always ambitious and wanting to do that next step each time?
I mean, it's not so much about the budget or the scale. It's more kind of every time you make a film, for me, every time I made something, I could kind of see what I dreamed about, what I dreamed the film would be. Then when I see the finished film, I was like, oh, it's like 50% is like what I wanted and 50% is not, you know. So I was like, I wanted to do exactly what I dreamed of. So every film I made, I was like, oh, I can see stuff now that was much more difficult with the late film, last film, but I can do it better now, you know. So it was much more about kind of challenging myself and believing that you can do something that's even more complex and even more daring and kind of pushing the boundaries of like cinema than doing something that's, you know, a bigger budget or like with more famous actors or something. I never really had that thing. For me, it's been more kind of making a film where everything in it is exactly as I imagined it to be, you know.
So with Opponent, which obviously we're promoting today, when did the idea come that you wanted to write this story in this film and tell it? Because was it a few years ago? Did it take a while to get kind of greenlit, or how's the process? Because we don't know that behind the scenes. We see obviously a release, we see the poster, but was it a challenge to try and get this over the line, or was it quite simple for you?
I wrote this kind of, I made my first feature that was called The Charmer, and then I wrote this very shortly after that, and I wrote it like I wrote a different versions for myself in about, it took like around a year or something. I was just like trying to figure out what this story was. But then when I finally had made like a good first version of the screenplay, the finance went pretty fast actually. Much faster than my first film. And I think it's because I just became better at writing, you know. But it was difficult making the film because it was during the COVID and we had to pause and stop, and not so much about the finance, but just because it was difficult making a film about wrestling during the worst period of COVID and the whole thing with Iran and the kind of political thing about it and that whole aspect, you know. But the way, you know, the journey from screenplay to first day of shooting was faster than I was expecting, because like the finance part went faster than I thought. Then some other stuff took a little bit more time.
It's a film that I've been lucky enough to see an advanced screener of before today's interview, and I mean this now, and I would say it to anyone, not just because you're here. It's an incredible film. It's very authentic, but I think it's such an important film for people to see, because I watched it as an important eye-opener. That's how I saw it for me. But at the same time, I saw it as a great piece of art. So I kind of see it as two different things. You can enjoy it as a beautiful looking film with an amazing story, but it's an eye opener for people that don't realize what the world's like outside their own bubble. You must be really proud watching this back, because it is such a well showcased hardship for the refugees in the terms of kind of their everyday lives. And it must have took a lot of work and research to make this have that authenticity.
I mean, yeah, it was, thank you. It was a lot of the refugee parts of the story. Some of them were memories I had when I was a refugee coming to Sweden as a 6-year-old. I had a lot of memories that I wanted to do something with. But then it was the whole research. I mean, I talked to a lot of refugees who came to Sweden now and had a complete different experience than I had. And also, when I made the film, every extra that you see in the film are real refugees. So it just made, you know, it changes the way when you're making a film about a fictionalized family and like the people next to them are the real family, you know, it just affected everyone and it was extremely powerful. And the film really, there's this part of the film that I think is like one of my favorite parts, we see these kind of tabloid images of everyone who are looking into us. That wasn't in the script. It was just like, it was so inspiring to talk to them and hearing their stories and it, how it changed, how it was different from my story when I came to Sweden. So it was a very important part of the filmmaking of this to have the authentic, the that make it as real as possible, you know. So that was, I'm very happy that you think that it felt real.
Yeah, I think it's the showcasing of the hardship for the refugees because you're showing their everyday lives and the state that they're in. So I think you beautifully kind of conveyed this. You didn't do this really raw, you didn't dwell on the melancholy. You kind of really focused on it having the real life complexities that these people go through. And I think that's what made it so authentic for me. The detail and work in the cinematography is some of the best I've seen in years. I honestly was blown away by the cinematography. I thought it was stunning.
No, it was really Sebastian Winterö, who was the cinematographer. I mean, he's like amazing cinematographer, and we worked a lot with the visual language of the film, and he had a lot of ideas of how to portray people in a kind of humanistic, close, intimate way. And I wanted it to feel also this kind of, you know, because I remember, you know, the refugee time. It wasn't only darkness and hardship. It was also dreams and a lot of good memories of being a kid playing football out in the snow and all of these things. And I think that those things were necessary to come to kind of portray the complexity of trying to keep your dignity where everything has been taken from you and you try to build a life where you basically have nothing, you know. So, and I think those things and the whole kind of waiting thing, I think Sebastian really did amazingly, you know, the whole, when we just see the room and everything just changes in the room, you know, and the camera is just still, and we have like this sense of in this room, it's been like 50 different lives have changed, you know, when someone got pregnant while someone is kicked out of the country and a kid is like painting something while woman is taking it away. And I just love that, those glimpses of life. And Sebastian was really, really great. I think it was amazing.
What was the real challenging things for this film? Was it the scale of it? Was it the fact that you're working, must be really long hours, really long days? Would you do anything different next time? Was there stuff that was really hard to overcome, or was it quite, you know, solid and you kind of got through it the way you hoped?
It was difficult with the whole COVID/wrestling.
Yeah.
The wrestling scenes were very difficult because the actor, like the main actor, Peyman Mahdi, and a lot of the actors, they were very, very good. Björn, who played Thomas, and a lot of the others, but it was just the wrestling parts were very difficult. I was just afraid all the time of, you know, they getting hurt. Can I do this? I'm not a wrestler myself, you know. So it was just like trying to figure out that whole language because the refugee part always felt intimate to me. It was easy, kind of, in the way. Because it was real.
It's from your heart, isn't it? Because you've been there, you've lived.
I've been there, you know.
Yeah.
While the wrestling part was so kind of technical. And when it becomes technical, I kind of try to struggle with finding my place in it. And that was probably the most difficult part. I think that when the scenes with Maran Lassiri, who plays the wife, and Peyman Mahdi, they were quite easy because it was just fun to see how those scenes went. But the also filming in the snow was so cold, you know, and the whole, you know, experience of real refugees who are part of our film, the emotional experience of we will go home to our houses and, you know, and they will go to a refugee center. That was much more difficult than I was expecting, even if I've experienced that, you know. It was just difficult because it's like the line between fiction and reality was extremely thin at some points in making the film.
With the wrestling, I grew up watching wrestling, but more of the sort of Hollywood American WWE and WWF, not the Olympic side. But it must be really hard to shoot because you don't want it to look over the top and too kind of forced. So you don't want it to look too fake. And at the same time, it needs to look authentic. So it needs to look real. But it's really hard because you don't want to injure or put your actors at risk. So I think he did so well because I've seen it done so over the top in films and TV before that it looks like a pantomime, you know, it looks so silly. So it must, did you do any research? Did you watch any kind of Olympic wrestling or old wrestling from back in the day to try and work out the best way to kind of shoot this certain scene?
I watched a lot of wrestling and tried to kind of see some, the kind of Greek wrestling and the freestyle, just to see like what's the difference between them. But also it was a process, the actors. They had a lot of like Payman did a lot of like had to build muscle for the part and we first had like a private trainer. Then we had this session with like a former Swedish Olympic wrestler who kind of helped us with choreographing the things. And for me, the wrestling was important because I wanted to portray it like beautiful because it's a kind of very violent, kind of aggressive sport, high intensity. But I wanted it almost to feel like the space where the character can say what he or can do what he can't even say in words, like it's this intimate kind of thing with the men and this thing. So it was kind of both the wrestling thing to take it seriously and do the real kind of moves, but also portray it in a way where it felt like it was almost his inner landscape or his inner desire or all these things. So yeah.
My final question for you today, obviously I'm aware of time, but what I do on this podcast is I always end with the same question. After our interview today is all edited and ready for the world to listen to, I'm going to put you on the spot now, Milad, but I like to finish with a song of your choice. So the guest gets to choose a song. Now I am putting you on the spot. I know there's a lot of songs in the world and loads of pieces of music, but is there a song that you really love, that means a lot to you, that you would love to be played today after our interview?
The first song that actually came into my mind for some weird, but it's, I, because I've listened to Bob Dylan a lot, like
Oh,
during my
lovely.
whole life, and the Blonde on Blonde album, and there's this song called "I Want You"
It's an
that's
amazing
really,
song.
really good.
I love that because sometimes if you think too hard about it, you'll be like, oh, why didn't I pick this song or why didn't I pick that song? But there's a reason, for some reason, Bob Dylan came to your mind before any other. And I truly believe that album is an absolute masterpiece. Like it's his greatest work. And,
It's the best,
I think it's a beautiful song to end today, and I'm really looking forward to seeing people's reactions to seeing this film. I
Thank
wish
you.
you all the luck. I know the film industry is a lot smaller than I realized, and I know that our paths will cross one day. There'll be a film festival or an event, and I know I'll see you, and I'll hopefully get to record again with you when you're working on your next film.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So there's my interview with me and Milad. What an amazing director! What a great guy! Very humble, and as you listen to this interview right now, I urge you all to go and check out the film Opponent, which is in UK and Irish cinemas from the 12th of April. I really hope that everyone's enjoyed today's interview as much as me. It felt great to sit down and really talk in depth about the making and the story that inspired this video. It's some real deep stuff, and I think the interview came out really well, so I'm really chuffed. If you've enjoyed today's episode, as always, please take the time just to share it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I do get to see all the people that do this, and it goes a long way. Please don't think I ever take this for granted. It means so much to me, and I'm so grateful. And if you really want to support the podcast, I do have a Patreon. I say this on each and every episode because it's what funds the podcast. It allows me to travel the country to record episodes for you guys at home. It also lets me host it on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And no money is made. It basically pays for the podcast and all the promotion. So anyone, if you want to sign up, the link is on markandme.com. And hey, there's a brand new website, so go and check it out now on markandme.com. It's looking really slick. I really love it. It's a huge improvement over the last one, and let me know what you think. Just before I go, as always, I want to give a big shout out to the sponsor of the podcast, Richer Sounds. Without those guys, I couldn't do this podcast. So if you're in the market for a home cinema, TV, sound system, Sonos, turntable, go on richersounds.com and check them out. Or visit one of the stores on your high street. Right, this next couple of weeks is going to be crazy. In my head right now, don't quote me exactly, but I'm thinking maybe 7 or 8 episodes over the next 3 weeks. It's that busy. So until then, look after yourself, take care, and I'll speak to you all very soon.
Sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you. The cracked bells and washed out horns blow into my face with scorn, but it's not that way, I wasn't born to lose you. I want you, I want you, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. A drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you. I want you. I want you. Yes, I want you so bad. They've gone down, true love, they've been without it. But all their daughters put me down, cause I don't think about it. Well, I return to the Queen of Spades and talk with my chambermaid. She knows it, she's not afraid to look at her. She is good to me, and there's nothing she doesn't see. She knows where I'd like to be, but it doesn't. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now your dancing child with his Chinese suit, he spoke to me, I took his flute. No, I wasn't very cute to him, was I? But I did it because you lied, and because he took you for a ride. Because time is on his side, and because I want you. I want you. Yes, I want you.